Buonasera amici e benvenuti a Kimberly's Italy, a podcast about our love of all things Italian. We share our own travels on this podcast, as well as my own escapades from living in Milano while I was a fashion photographer. I segued from that career and am now a travel planner with a rather impressive list of very happy clients who are thrilled to experience Italy more like a local than with the rest of the masses. I'd like to mention one thing before we start, and that is, even though I was once fluent in Italian, I don't speak it as well as I used to. And I know for a fact I have mispronounced words in various episodes, and sometimes I catch my mistakes, and then we will re-record those words. Much to Tommaso's chagrin. However, I do fess up when I realize that I have slaughtered a pronunciation on previous episodes. For example, the village of Varenna on Lago di Como, I have literally pronounced it Varena for about 25 or 30 years, and it wasn't until my friend from Chernobyl corrected me just last fall. Dio mio, that's a long time to be mispronouncing one of my favorite villages in the world.
I'm sorry, there are so many places that are mispronounced. I'm from Massachusetts. It's Boston. Boston.
Good point. All right.
Or Worcester. Worcester. I mean, if you took those words and tried to spell them out, you'd have
correct
but word salad.
But put it this way. All these years I've known you, 27 and counting, you thought Varenna was Varena because I just mispronounced it. Now we know better. However, in summary, Kimberly's Italy is not a podcast to learn the Italian language, just one that shares the amore italiana.
And everyone makes mistakes.
Okay, va bene. I just felt kind of bad.
Let me add, I found another very nice review from a Canadian named Frank Smitty. And he said, with every episode, we feel like we have escaped to Italy. Kimberly's Italy podcast offers travel tips, Italian language tips.
The irony.
The irony
right now.
Of the moment. Humor, history, anecdotes, and food tips. And most of all, at the end of each episode, you will feel like you have spent time in a friend's home, captivated by stories of Italy. It's really fun. Thanks to Kimberly and Tommaso for sharing your stories in such a captivating way. And thanks, Frank, for sharing your review for
right.
us.
Right. Grazie, Franco. Right? Grazie, Franco.
There you go. There's a little Italian right? for you, Frank.
Very simpatico. And that is the same type of happy vibe my clients tell me when they're ready to leave for their trip. We get to know each other through the phone calls we have and the emails, and then we have this little mini friendship. And he somewhat summarized that, even though he's not a client of mine. Allora, on to Genova, or Genoa, as it's pronounced in English. Let me brag about its history and its longevity as one of the capitals of the Maritime Republics for 700 years. There were four port cities that made up the Maritime Republics in the Middle Ages. Amalfi, which we've discussed before, Genova, Pisa, and Venezia. And all four of these city-states played a significant role in trade and naval dominance in the Mediterranean. Genova's maritime influence ran from 1099 to 1797, which is pretty damn impressive. Like so many European cities, Genova's history dates back to pre-Roman times, 218 BC, as a matter of fact. But fast forward to the late 1700s and early 1800s when Napo, Napoleone Bonaparte, the busiest man in history, did not spare Genova during one of his greedy stages. Yet even worse was World War II, where over 10,000 buildings were destroyed because Genova was targeted specifically due to its economic standing in Italy and its trade and naval capabilities. However, in the middle of Genova's maritime and trade fame, a man named Cristoforo Colombo was born in the city in 1451. Most Americans, or English-speaking people, know him by the name of Christopher Columbus, who discovered the Americas in 1492. Let me ask you this, Tommaso.
Yes, pumpkin.
Don't call me pumpkin on this podcast.
Yes, my little pasta.
He calls me pumpkin all the time. Why? I don't know. Do you remember the poem we all had to learn in about the third or fourth grade? In 1492.
Yes.
Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
Yes.
That I love that. It's my favorite. So, Cristoforo Colombo got his sea legs in Genova as a teenager and sailed on trade ships all over the Mediterranean and Aegean Seas. And do you know who else, by the way, FYI, was also born in Genova? Renzo Piano.
The great architect.
Right? His father was a builder in the city, so he started young. He designed the Pompidou Center in Paris, the Shard in London, and the Whitney in New York City. Another fun fact about Genova is that because of its trade with sailing vessels, the sails for the ships were made in the city. And the fabric of these sails, or maybe just the leftover fabric, became popular with the men, these sailors, because it was sturdy and accessible to them at a cheap price. Keep in mind that the city was initially spelled with a J instead of a G, and the fabric got the nickname of Bleu de Gens. Then, in the late 1800s, two American immigrants took this fabric and made riveted pants and named them with the English version of Bleu de Gens. And blue jeans were born in Genova.
I have one thing to say, knowing what little I know about ancient sailcloth. Rough. That's all I have to say. I don't need to go any more detail. Rough.
Isn't that funny, though? It's such a great story. And the point is, the immigrant was named Levi Strauss.
No way.
Well, that's the point of this story, dude. And his partner, his name was Jacob Davis. So funny, right? I guess it's better to say I'm wearing Levi's than Jacob's.
That I'm wearing sailcloth.
That's such a funny point.
Rough, mate, rough.
Right. All right. Well, back to my days. When I first went to Genova, I thought it was a bit like Napoli. Gritty, busy, and was next to impossible to find your way while driving through that city. Keep in mind that it was way before smartphones and Google Maps. So each time I was trying to go to a specific place, it either took forever or we completely gave up. That was just what you did in Genova.
I remember probably 15 years ago, I drove through Genova and I drove down from Nice to La Spezia to see a yacht builder. And all I know is driving through Genova was mayhem, just mayhem. And going down from Nice, you're going, it's all these bridges, all these tunnels, light, dark,
right,
light,
right,
dark.
Right, right.
And you get to Genova and you're like, oh my God, this is crazy.
Crazy in a different way. It is pazzesco.
Yeah.
That means crazy, insane. However, as crazy as it was, Tommaso, I used to do that drive from Milano to Nice at least once a month to visit my Danish friends who lived in Old Town Nice. Genova was directly in the middle of that four-hour drive, so a majority of those road trips would include a stop in Genova for dinner on our way from Milano to Nice, and on the return, it would mean a very late night dinner on the way back to Milano. And why was I so obsessed to have dinner in Genova?
Yum.
For the pesto. Mm. Pesto in Genova, or basically anywhere on the Ligurian coast, is where the basilico, grows in that salty air climate. It is unlike any other pesto you will ever have in your life. That sounds like kind of demonstrative, but it's true.
Well, every region, there's nothing you're going to get better than in certain regions when that specialty is there.
Right. Pesto Genovese has probably been a staple of their cuisine forever. But the first time it was mentioned, written in word, was in a cookbook written by Giovanni Battista Arrato in the mid-1800s. You would think it would have been around since like 1200. However, what I would like to share is that all of you should watch Stanley Tucci's episode from his series, Searching for Italy, on Liguria. He basically meets the pesto god of Liguria in that episode, and the footage of that basilico will make you weep. Remember, we would just watch it like, no, really?
I'm hungry.
Dio mio.
I'm hungry.
Oh, stop saying that. You always said that.
I'm always hungry.
I know. Pesto Genovese is reason enough to visit Genova. And by the way, Pesto Genovese also has the distinction of being a DOP product of Italy, protected designation of origin. There is even, check this out, a biannual world championship of making pesto with mortar and pestle.
We have to go to that someday.
I am totally on board with that.
Maybe I could be a judge.
A taste tester.
Exactly.
Well, we will go to Genova and eat pesto nonstop for a few days next time we're in that vicinity. This past October, we had to drive past it on our way to Pisa because we had an appointment we couldn't miss. But I promise you, we will return.
I could see from the Autostrada how massive that port was when we drove by. Again, it reminded me of my trip driving directly through it, the mayhem
ensued. Yeah.
A huge sprawl of various ports, even man-made ones down the coast.
Like man-made docks on the exterior, even.
Yeah.
Anywhere they could fit a boat, they'll do it.
It's a working port. It's not like Portofino.
Yes.
There's no influencers with their booty on the beach down there.
Because it's not that beautiful.
Exactly. Well, it's beautiful in the way that it's got a great history. And in an industrial way, it's a working port.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be some working ports in the world.
Giusto. Appunto.
Appunto.
Well, let me just say, if you were to research, any of you, the most famous ristorante in Genova for pesto, you will be overwhelmed because there are so many articles that each claim to know the best place. However, I will say, in my day on these road trips, we would go to Sa Pesto, which is a simple family-run place of maybe three or four generations. And to be completely honest, we kept returning to Sa Pesto because once we could remember how to drive to that area, find the parking, which is always sketchy, then walk down the narrow carruggi, as they're called, which means like an alleyway, the effort was always worth it. And actually, an English friend of ours named Simon came with us a few times to Nice, and he nicknamed that walk, once we found the parking, he nicknamed that walk Dodgy Carruggi.
Well, if you spelled dodgy with an I at the end of it, it would be Italian.
It was so funny. And we're like, we know, but we promise it will be really good. And was it? Da morire. Another bragging right of Genova is that it has a 250-meter long street with palaces that is now a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Because of the wealth that trade brought to the city, they set an example of urban planning and made a street called Strada Nuova, which simply means new street, and they built large palazzos side by side to make the most impressive street in the city. It is now known as Via Garibaldi because...
Of course, every major city has a Via Garibaldi.
Or Corso Garibaldi or statues of Giuseppe Garibaldi because he is the one who orchestrated the creation of the Italian nation state, in part due to overthrowing the papal state. He was as busy as Napo. However, clearly, he has more things named after him in all of Italy than Napo ever will. On Via Garibaldi in Genova, you can enter these palazzos, which is in a pedestrian-only section of the city. It is a short street east of the port, and each of the palaces are about 4 stories tall. But the first floor being so high, it just makes it seem so grand and imposing, but in a stately and beautiful way. And Tommaso, the doors of these palazzos on Via Garibaldi in Genova are about as tall as that door we had to go through
in Bologna. That was a
right?
big, with a little...
Right. Well, we went through the cutout, but these doors right. in Genova on Via Garibaldi are like that. So that first floor is super impressive. And then the 3 floors above them are, you know, a bit more normal.
I'd still be pushing to try close that door if it were.
Imagine a petite little nonna trying to close one of those original doors anywhere in Italy. But so, the exterior of the tops of these floors are decorative and ornate. And again, very, very grand in their appearance. And the interiors of many of these palazzos are filled with frescoes and paintings from some of Italy's finest artists during the day. The owners of the palazzos, of course, had to outdo each other and show off their wealth. Now, another very worthy visit is Palazzo Reale, which is not on Via Garibaldi, but somewhat close and a bit further into the harbor. Like all royal palaces in Italy, this one is also amazing, with some of it being over the top ornate, as they used to do. It almost looks like Versailles. That Palazzo Reale in Torino, which blew us away, is indeed full of gold and lavish decor. However, the major difference is, unlike the Palazzo Reale in Torino, that place sat so prominently in a grand setting amongst other architecturally significant buildings. But Palazzo Reale in Genova is surrounded by the dense busyness of a port city with those massive ship cranes in the background and smoggy air. I mean, the difference could not be more diverse. Yet the interiors, showy, gaudy, opulent, just over the top. However, good point, Tommaso, you remembered Palazzo Reale in Torino.
I'd like to say one thing about the port of Genova. We're here on this little island, and as you well know, we get woken up sometimes at 5 a.m. by the prop wash.
Daily.
Well, right, by the ships, the ro-ros that come in.
That means roll on, roll off.
Roll off, car transport.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the car transports, I thought, was Garibaldi Lines. And I just looked it up while you were talking away. It's actually Grimaldi Lines.
Right, right.
But so it ties in that little bit of Italy that goes by us once a week in the morning at 5:30.
Grimaldi is Italian, so we'll stick with that. All right. In my opinion, Genova and Napoli are similar in feel of port cities, as we just discussed. Grungy parts and amazing parts all getting along just fine, with loads of history. And in Genova's case, however, the amazing pesto genovese is the cherry on the top. I really have such fond memories of those road trips through Genova and the Ligurian coast in general. Sometimes, however, I had to take the train if I couldn't convince a friend that had a car to come with me to Nice. And that train ride was so long and somewhat annoying. Pretty, however. But to be honest, I had some very fun trips on those trains because you meet people from all over the world in those smelly cabin cars.
It used to be smelly. They're not that smelly anymore.
No, not anymore.
Right.
Because then it was either cigarette smoke or hitchhikers that hadn't showered in weeks or spilled beer on the floor that was still tacky.
Ooh.
It was gross. It was one-of-a-kind transportation, let's say. Cheap, but smelly.
You were in the cattle car, so to speak.
Definitely. But funny enough, since this episode is on Genova, let me just mention that I am still friends with a woman named Louise from Australia.
And again, here is the connection. It's not a small world. It's a medium-sized cocktail party.
Correct. Well, this woman, Louise, with her husband, walked into my cabin when they boarded the train in Geneva. After chatting for a bit, the hubby bought us some beer, and when they told me they were going to Marseille, I asked, why? I think they were on their honeymoon, and it was their first time to France, so naturally I said, you know, Marseille is not nearly as beautiful as Nice, so come with me. And they did. They got off with me in Nice. We walked to my friend's, Parent Lisa's apartment in Old Town, and they slept on the living room couch for the first night, and then we found them a small hotel for their next, quote-unquote, few days.
What a romantic way to spend your honeymoon on the couch.
No, they had already started elsewhere.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they were just carrying on. So, Per, my friend, was out of town at a tennis tournament. So, Lisa and I took Louise and her husband to a nightclub both nights called Pastel. It was awesome. And I went back to Milano on that Sunday night, very tired from complete lack of sleep. Yet, I said goodbye to our new Australian friends. However, I went back the next weekend because Per was back in France. And guess who was still there?
Like sticky gum.
They had such a good time and they stayed. And to this day, Per sees Louise and a new husband named Jeff every year in Australia when he is there, also for the tennis tournament. And about 6 years ago, I went to New York while Lisa and her kids were there while Per was working the U.S. Open. And then after that, everyone came up here to our little island, and now Tommaso is in on this circle of friendship as well.
It was quite a cackle.
Oh, Dio mio. And all of that stems from a single train ride 25 years ago, and we still have a friendship that carries on across the globe. Obviously, it's much easier now to stay in touch with email and WhatsApp, but this is one example of the pure joys of travel. All right, actually, Tommaso, let's end this episode with a huge hello to Louise from Down Under.
And thanks to Louise, I now know the phrase, put your big girl's blouse on, mate.
And that came about because her husband, Jeff, was overserved, maybe, the first night here. And then we all went to leave to go to Newport the next day for a lunch at this awesome sailing restaurant, and he declined. She stood there in our living room, put her hands on her hips and said, put your big girl's blouse on, mate. I don't think either of us have ever laughed so hard at a single phrase. It was priceless. So, hello, Louise. Talk to you soon. Va bene, Tommaso?
Va bene.
Ciao, ciao. And actually, let's just tell everyone, we will not have a new episode next week. Sorry to say, super busy, but we'll be back from Bell Italia. Grazie mille.
Ciao, ciao.